Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast from the Early Morning Late Show. Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. Hour two is underway, starting right now. We've got a great show coming up. Bill English is already in studio. He was just previously in the green room, or the room formerly known as the green room. He was complaining that there's nothing green in the room.
Green in the room.
Wait, you're not on yet, Bill. Don't turn his mic on.
Oh, is my mic on?
Yeah, it is now.
Oh, it is. Okay. Yeah. There's nothing green in the green room.
Well, I'll get to you later.
I was asking that.
Yeah. All right. I found this interesting. Elon Musk is going to have to change his phone number. The CEO of Tesla and SpaceX accidentally shared his personal phone number on Twitter. He was sending it to a technical director of Facebook's virtual reality project, and he accidentally tweeted his own personal phone number. The billionaire forgot to make it a private message, and it wound up sending his phone number to 16.7 million followers. And you want to build my self-driving car. You want to send me to the moon, huh? That's it? That's the guy that wants to do that. Well, after Bill English, Ward Brehm's coming into the studio. He's written a book called Bigger Than Me, and it's going to be a fascinating conversation with a very interesting book. I highly recommend it. It reads fantastically, and I'm excited to talk to Ward. Matter of fact, I first met Ward, I think, when I was about 7 years old. And of all the people that would walk into the studio, he might be one of the only people that would know my childhood nickname. And I'm going to beg him not to bring it up. There you go. All right. It is 6 minutes after the hour. We're going to take a little break and then talk to Bill English. Be back in a minute.
Ring, ting, tingle, and two. Come on, it's lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you. The snow is falling and friends are calling.
It's 7 minutes after the hour. Merry Christmas, Bill English.
Merry Christmas to you.
So nice to have you in studio
it
once
is.
Again.
Yes.
Your topic today is fascinating.
It is.
It's based on Proverbs 4:24. It says, keep your mouth free of perversity. Keep corrupt talk far from your lips. It's great. It's a great proverb.
It is. And we're going to talk about speech in business today.
Okay.
Let's get to it. And we're going to talk specifically from an owner or a leader's perspective.
That also mean manager?
I'm sorry?
Could that also be a manager?
That could be a manager.
Okay.
It could be a team leader.
Awesome.
Keep your mouth free from perversity. This is Proverbs 4:24. Keep corrupt talk far from your lips. The word perversity there in the Hebrew means the wrong use of something or someone. So you have something that had an intended use, and you used it in a different way than what it was intended to be used.
Can you be more specific? Do you have an example in mind?
Yeah, I do. In just a moment, I want to combine it with the corrupt.
Okay.
The Hebrew word for corrupt means the quality of being deceitful or underhanded. So hence, in our speech, when we take words and use them to lead others to believe something other than what is true, we have both perverted and corrupted our speech. And Proverbs says, keep your mouth free of perversity and keep corrupt talk far from your lips.
Okay. So
how does that work?
Yeah. I'm trying to figure it out.
So just go to marketing and sales, for example. Let's just dive into the marketing and sales departments. And how often do we see in marketing perversity and corruptness in the sense that the marketing and the sales either overhypes something, maybe the benefits of a particular product or a particular service, or they lead you to believe that that what is true is not true, or that what is not true is true. So, for example, a very common thing is you go into a clothing store and you put on a jacket. I would put on a jacket, maybe a gal will put on a pair of jeans or something like that, and the salesperson will say, boy, you look great in that. Boy, that looks good on you. You know, and this flattery to my way of thinking, is sometimes over the top, and it's both perverse and corrupt because maybe you don't look that good in it, or maybe it's just making you look better than what you did, but you don't really look all that great.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's just a very common example of how I think sometimes we can have perversity and corruptness in our speech.
Okay. What did the salesperson say when you put that jacket on you have on right now?
Actually, no one helped me with this one.
Okay.
that's why it doesn't look very good.
Yeah, I was about to say. Okay. What else?
What else? Our speech in marketing and sales needs to be run through this perversity and corrupt filters. So let's just take some of the common. Let's go back a few years. Let's go all the way back to when FedEx started the overnight packaging deliveries business,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And their tagline was, "When it absolutely positively has to be there overnight."
Okay.
Now, was that perverse or was that corrupt?
I don't know.
So,
what am I, the answer man?
It's a rhetorical question.
Okay.
Right? I probably shouldn't have paused after
No, that's okay. I think that was their mission. That was their hope that they would be able to provide that service.
And they did.
Okay.
Right. But how many packages absolutely positively had to be there the next day? Had to be there overnight. And it just seems to me that they were successful in creating a whole overnight market.
Okay.
In the packaging delivery business that didn't exist before that.
Mm-hmm.
Was that perverse or corrupt? Maybe, maybe not, right? But you get into the area of politics, and this is just about all we hear is perversity and corruptness.
Mm-hmm.
From both sides of the aisle, both Republicans and Democrats, I would even say the Libertarians get into this, where you will have one of the president's common phrases, boy, this is tremendous, this is just outstanding, this is, you know, he always uses over-the-top language to describe something he likes,
mm-hmm.
and he always uses over-the-top language to describe something he doesn't like.
And he always repeats himself.
And he does.
Two or three times.
Yeah. And so to my way of thinking, that is both perverse and corruptness in speech because he's not being accurate. It is better if our marketing and sales speech is accurate. It is better if our political speech is accurate.
Mm-hmm.
It is better from a more godly perspective if our speech doesn't lead somebody to believe something other than what is actually true. And this really gets to some of the heart of the matter. Can a person who doesn't walk with God, can a person who is steeped in deception and lies really know what is true? You know, you look at some of the things that have happened in the last 25 years that we could all reference together, from presidential actions to marketing debacles, and you say, do these people understand what truth is? Is truth as a category, does it even exist in their schema and in the way that they look at life? And so one of the ways that you can kind of look at that is to say, is their speech perverse? Is it corrupt? Does it lead you to believe something that isn't objectively true?
Okay. Proverbs 12:6 and 12:13, the words of the wicked lie in wait for blood, but the speech of the upright rescues them, and evildoers are trapped by their sinful talk, and so the innocent escape trouble.
Yeah, this is another one that I very much like, even though, you know, you wouldn't know that. The words of the wicked lie in wait for blood, but the speech of the upright rescues them. How does the speech of a righteous person rescue them? Have you ever thought about that? Have you ever asked that question? How does my speech rescue me? And it rescues in two ways. And the first way is that I don't commit myself to something that I know isn't going to be true.
Mm-hmm.
So my speech isn't perverse, it isn't corrupt, and I'm not going to commit to something that isn't true. So I'm not going to commit to a contract that I know I can't fulfill. If I give you my word, I'm going to go ahead and fulfill whatever it is that I told you I would fulfill.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, my speech is going to rescue me. It's not going to result in evil actions. It's not going to lead you to believe something that isn't true. Now, think about that from a business owner and a business leader's perspective, and how often business owners and leaders and managers are having to make these, I'm going to call them soft commitments to their staff or their team. You know, I'll go ahead and do this, or I'll make sure that this gets done, or let me go talk to this other person about this particular matter. Your speech needs to be accurate, and if you follow through on what you're doing, then your speech can actually rescue you from those who want to do you harm and those who want to do harm within your business or your organization.
Okay, so maybe it's useful if you're a business leader that you have a long history of doing what you say you're going to do. And maybe that goes back as early as a child.
I don't know.
A teenager.
Yeah, but was truth something that was in your family that was valued and highly praised?
That's
highly
probably
praised.
A better way of saying it.
Right?
Yeah, better way of saying it.
I remember I could tell my friends when my son David was he's now 20, when he was growing up, I would sometimes tell my friends, I know that whatever David tells me is the truth, because he would just never lie to me. It just never occurred to him.
Mm-hmm.
And he was always very accurate in his speech. That's just, it was part of his nature.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he would come home and say, Dad, this is what happened at school and what the teacher's telling you isn't right, I always believed my son because I knew he was going to be accurate.
Okay, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Bill English. And the question I have for him is, how is it we can escape trouble by being innocent? We'll be back in just a minute. We are back. It's 18 minutes after the hour. I have Bill English in studio, and we're talking about, basing our discussion on Proverbs 4:24, keep your mouth free of perversity, keep corrupt talk far from your lips. So, Bill, how is it that we can escape trouble by being innocent?
You know, this is an interesting question, because when I read Proverbs 12:13, and I'll read it here, evildoers are trapped by their sinful talk, and so the innocent escape trouble. And the question came to me, how does innocence help us escape trouble? And the dots that I connected were that if I'm innocent, that means I'm probably walking with the Lord in righteousness, right? And if I'm walking with the Lord and the Holy Spirit is living within me, then when evildoers who are trapped by their sinful talk, when they're engaging in some kind of sinful talk, the Holy Spirit's going to tip me off to that.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to put a check in my spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, I'm going to be able to escape that trouble because I'm innocent, because I'm walking with the Lord. I'm going to have discernment in that, and I will be able to discern their evil talk, and I will be able to avoid whatever traps they're setting with their speech. And mind you, some of these evildoers don't even know they're setting traps, but you as a person walking with the Lord can discern that and know that.
Mm-hmm. So the restraining power of the Holy Spirit will help you remain innocent, because it will give you a warning signal. Tell the truth.
Right. Yeah. And it's not just restraining, it's informing.
Yeah, true.
It's an informing thing. So you go to the auto dealership, right, and you're looking at, for my case, trucks, and you're saying, how much is this one going to cost, and what are the features here, and what does the guarantee look like?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of things to consider
mm-hmm.
when you're purchasing a vehicle. You got to have your antenna up for salespeople who may or may not be misleading you.
I would say in any business, you have to have that same filter, don't you?
You do, and this is especially true when you are...
Let's not pick on car dealerships.
No, let's not. Let's pick on people who are interviewing for a job and employers who are offering jobs.
Mm-hmm.
How many employers oversell their jobs? And how many people tend to not pay attention to the negative aspects that they could pay attention to when looking at a job, and all they're looking at is the money and the opportunity mm-hmm. and that kind of thing?
There's a great proverb. It's not in Scripture, but basically, I think it's a truism that says if you don't want somebody to know something, don't do it.
I believe that would be that's a profundity. We should do Bill Arnold profundities.
Yes, but it connects to Proverbs 12:13 that says evildoers are trapped by their sinful talk.
Yeah, they are.
And so the innocent escape trouble. I mean, all day long you hear about, you know, people that get arrested and they tell the police officer something completely not true.
Yeah.
And all it does is create more trouble for them.
Yeah, it really does.
Mm-hmm.
And police officers are well versed in people who offer up flimsy excuses. I mean, you just be on the job for a couple of years as an officer and you'll know when people are lying to you. A
couple hours, I would say.
It's actually part of the academy training.
So if you're a Christian business owner, leader, team leader, manager, and you're walking with God, do you think you can spot seductive speech a little bit easier? Or do you think we're as easily fooled by it?
I think we are as easily fooled as two things. One, as we want to be fooled, and two, as we're not walking with the Lord, in all honesty.
So how do we avoid getting injured by a person that's trying to mislead us?
That's where, in all honesty, I think we not only do our due diligence in researching whatever it is, the matter that is we're talking about, but we have to listen to the Holy Spirit. We have to hear the voice of God. Mm-hmm. And this is not something where, in my estimation, you sit down and you have to be in a quiet, dark room, and you know you have to really labor over hearing God's word or God's voice. Instead, it is more of an instantaneous, moment-by-moment thing that God just dialogues with us. And that's a concept that is not taught and not believed in a number of churches. But it just seems to me that God does talk with us. You know, the old hymn, he walks with me and he talks with me, mm-hmm. and he tells me that I am his own, right? And God can talk with us. Mm-hmm. And if we're listening and we're walking in righteousness with him, then I think he can tip us off when these kinds of things are happening.
Okay, let's talk about what the righteous might have an advantage in terms of being delivered from the ways of the wicked. I mean, do we have, as righteous followers of Christ, do we have an opportunity to maybe be a little bit more protected?
Well, that is the protection, is
okay,
it not?
Okay, I would hope so.
Is it not that God, through the Holy Spirit, is going to talk with us and help us to avoid some of these schemes?
But haven't we all fallen for little get-rich-quick scheme?
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah, we've fallen for get-rich-quick schemes. We've fallen for schemes that are too good to be true. We fall for marketing that appeals to fear or to security or to prestige. I remember when I was first buying cell phones for the first time, And the sales guy was saying, but don't you want you and your wife to be able to contact each other if something bad happens? Don't you want to be able to talk right away? Mm-hmm. It was that fear factor that she was playing on to get me to buy cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that was back when they were 6 pounds and 3 ounces, right?
Right.
But, you know, how often do appeals to fear or to appeals to our financial or personal security or prestige, you know, don't you want to have this degree and have everybody look up to you kind of thing?
Yes, I do.
That's the basis for purchasing and something or committing to something. That kind of speech we ought to be aware of in marketing and in sales and in our general discourse, and we ought to let the Lord inform us as to what the motivations are behind that speech.
Mm-hmm. So as it says in Proverbs, keep your mouth free of perversity. I just want to spend a little bit of time focusing on that word. What would you say perversity is? Because the first thing that comes into my mind is a really off-color joke or something like that, or something that's deceptive. And
yeah, here perversity would mean the wrong use of something or someone. So the wrong use of language. Language is intended to communicate truth. So anytime it communicates something other than truth, we are being perverse in our speech. So if you were to go back to chapter 5 where the writer is talking about the woman who is very flattering and her speech is smoother than oil and she's very seductive with that young man, it's not that she's sexy in that chapter as much as she's flattering and she's building his ego and she captures him that way. And so be on the lookout for seductive and smooth speech. Over-the-top flattery. I could sit here and I'll just give an example. You know, Bill, you are by far the best radio personality I've ever heard, and you're the best comedian that I've ever heard.
Thank you.
You know?
You speak truth.
Yeah, I do speak truth, right? But if I were to go on and on and on about that, then that would become perverse.
Yeah, okay. Big plans for Christmas?
Going to hang around. My son is home. My son, whom I love and who I'm well pleased with, is home from college.
Nice.
And as a family, we're going to go get a cord of wood and stack it in our garage so we can burn it all winter.
Nice, nice. Yeah. Well, thanks for being here. And Merry Christmas, Bill English.
Merry Christmas to you, Dr. Arnold.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you coming in. And we'll take a short break. And coming up next, 20 minutes to the hour, Ward Brehm's going to be in studio. Be back in a minute.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da
Good morning. It's half past the hour. We're going to take a little break for news, and at 20 minutes till the top of the hour, my in-studio guest is going to be Ward Brem. He's written a book called Bigger Than Me, Forward by Rick Warren. Should be interesting. Be back in a minute.
That gloomy mask, tragedy.
Yeah.
It's not your style.
No, it's not your style.
24 minutes until the top of the hour, Scott Sauls, author and pastor, recommends seeking out people who don't necessarily agree with you on everything. He believes this can lead to a strong friendship.
Oftentimes, I think in churches, and it's not unique to churches, it's unique to all kinds of communities. You just kind of tribalize with, you know, a handful of people, and usually they think just like you do about so many things. And what that does is it impoverishes our ability to be enriched by the multiple perspectives and experiences that other people coming from different places have. Like, why wouldn't an executive pursue a friendship with a person in middle management or a person in maintenance or vice versa? You know, there's just so much to learn. And maybe because we're so busy, we don't take the time to pursue those kinds of connections that might take a little bit of extra effort.
That is an interview we had with Scott Sauls. If you want to hear that full interview, head over to myfaithradio.com. Power of True Friendship. Scott Sauls, S-A-U-L-S, should get you to that interview. Take a very short break, and my friend Ward Brem is in studio. He's written a book called Bigger Than Me. Just when I thought I had all the answers, God changed the questions. You are not going to want to miss this. Be back in a minute.
When was the last time you asked your teenager a question, then waited for the answer? Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. I found that one of the most important tools in a parent's toolbox doesn't cost a thing. It's the effort to ask a question and then taking the time to listen for the answer. When I coach parents in connecting with their teen, I give them three things to think about. First, ask relevant questions. Don't fake it. Second, let them think about the answer. Don't supply it. And third, value their response. Don't correct it. When you do, you're communicating that you respect your teen. So let me ask you again. When was the last time you asked your teen a really thoughtful question?
Are you struggling with your teen? Get a free online parenting course called Tough Guys and Drama Queens at freeparentingcourse.com.
Welcome back to the show. It's 22 minutes until the top of the hour. I have in studio my friend Ward Brem's written a book called Bigger Than Me. Just when I thought I had all the answers, God changed the questions. Forward by Rick Warren. How about that? Good morning, Ward.
Good morning.
It's so nice for you to come in. This is a fascinating read, and I have to say, God got your attention at kind of midlife, didn't he?
He sure did.
So to speak. You lost your dad when you were 39 years old, and it was a tough one, wasn't it?
Yeah. It actually, for me, was the beginning of what I call the great humbling, because up to that point, I figured I knew everything.
Yeah. And you were a successful business guy, and you decided, I got the world. I know how this thing works.
Yeah, I actually felt that I had all the answers. And when my father died, I realized I certainly didn't know anything about dad's dying and left a huge hole in my life, a much larger impact than I thought it would have had. And as a result, it started me thinking on maybe there are a few other things that I don't know everything about. It was a significant point in my life.
Mm-hmm. And that was not an easy thing for you to accept, because you had a fair sense of knowing how life works, and you're a successful guy, and you know how to make things happen.
Right, and I was able to control all outcomes,
right.
And that one obviously I had no control over, and it began a very humbling process.
Yeah, so without a lot of spiritual depth in your life, you had an invitation a couple of years after your dad died to go to Africa, and you said yes.
Yeah, I was at church, which I hadn't frequented often, when my pastor that actually confirmed me. He was 33, I was 15, Arthur Rauner, who's a legend here.
He is.
And around the country and around the world, certainly in Africa. On my way out of church, he said, nice to see you here, Ward. It's been a while. And I'm going to Africa in 2 months. I'd love to have you come with me. And I couldn't believe that he was asking me that question. Actually, just previous, the week before, I'd read a book called The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey, and I didn't read it to learn anything. I just wanted to make sure he had them all right.
Right.
You know, Mr. Cocky.
Right,
and, but I was thinking about this notion of paradigms, that two people can see the same exact set of facts and have completely different interpretations. Mm-hmm. And I was doing a mental exercise of whether you could do a paradigm change on purpose, rather than usually that happens through a paradigm shift happens through a death or divorce or some type of traumatic event. And I was just thinking in my head, Somalia was in the news. People were dying by the thousands from famine. And I started to think, as an example, I wonder if I saw someone starve to death, I'll bet it would change my paradigm on starvation, and maybe more.
Mm-hmm.
And that thought left me as quickly as it came. Mm-hmm. And here it is a week later, and Arthur's invited me to Africa. And I told him, what a coincidence. I was just kind of thinking about Africa, which I've never thought before.
Yeah, coincidence, huh?
And then I said, no. You know, there's no way I'm going to go to Africa. And he said, would you pray about it? And I said, I still laugh about that. I looked him in the eye and I said, look, you're the pastor. You pray about it. I'll think about it. I'll either say yes or no.
Yeah.
But
it
wouldn't leave my mind. It was very, very persistent. Never had quite that happen before or since, where I just couldn't get it out of my mind and finally went.
So you're in rural Africa. Okay, you're just out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, there's no gourmet coffee shops or berry coffee. So all of a sudden, you meet a six-year-old girl. That sort of changes your perspective or your paradigm shifts a little bit.
Now, we were on a bumpy road in Ethiopia, and I was with World Vision, who was sponsoring the trip, and we saw this little girl off to the side, and I told him to stop the car, and we were in a hurry. He said, we can't stop. And I said, if you don't stop the car, I'm going to jump out the window.
Mm-hmm.
And I went up to this little girl. She had an impossible load of sticks on her back. The rope that she used to secure them to her back was cutting into her little chest. She was 4 years old. And I looked into her eyes, and something just kind of cracked inside of me. I realized she was the same age as my daughter, but living a completely and totally different life, and had no voice, had no advocate, had no control over what her future was going to be. And it really lit the fuse for me in terms of a life of dedication to the poor in Africa, but more importantly, my calling.
Mm-hmm.
My calling.
So when you met this little girl, and then you realized upon meeting other people, they were having a tremendous amount of joy in their life despite their desperate circumstances.
You know, that's the paradox. You know, when people go to Africa and are able to actually meet the people versus just see the animals, an amazing thing takes place, and it's taken me a long time to figure it out. Because these people are living in abject poverty. They're living in situations that are absolutely untenable, that would not be even allowed for an instant in this country. Yet they had this sense of joy, this sense of contentment that didn't make any sense. You'd say if you or I lived in those situations, we'd be miserable. You know, a lot of people would want to end their life. It would be so bad from looking out. And I'm not discounting the problems that people have, and mortality rates are tremendously high. But they have a faith that you can cut with a knife.
Mm.
You know, one of the questions I'm asked more than any other by my African friends is, "So, what do you pray for?" and it stopped me the first time, and I said, "Well, you know, I pray for." I'm kind of stammering. I'm praying for all sorts of things, and they said, "Well, you know, if I were you, I don't think I'd pray at all. It seems like you have everything.
Mm-hmm.
You got medical care. You've got enough food. Your kids never worry about having enough to eat."
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a haunting question when you think about it.
Yeah. I think of when I'm roughing it, it's usually the hotel stops room service after 10 and it's 10:30 and I can't get a turkey club. And I'm going, what's up with this?
Right. Yeah. Or my latte's not quite hot enough.
Right. So I want to take a break here in just a minute, Ward. But you wrote a very interesting chapter in your book on Alone But Not Alone, And the subtitle is Mr. Busy Pants Becomes a Hermit. And I think it's so interesting in our world today that we have such a hard time finding solitude and being alone with our thoughts. That horrifies us, doesn't it?
It sure does, yeah.
And why? And what can we learn when we get alone with our thoughts and hear God's voice?
You know, it occurred to me, it's almost impossible for me. When I try to get small, when I try to get quiet, when I try to meditate, when I get down on my knees to pray, you know, there's like a safari going on in my head.
Yeah, totally.
And it's really difficult to shut those voices off. But when you think about it, the question that occurred to me is God has done so much for me in my life. You know, what is it that I could give back to him? You know, is it possible for me to actually give something back to God? And what I realized was, yes, there is what he wants more than anything else, and that's my time,
mm-hmm.
my time with him,
mm-hmm.
and the gift of actually allocating as much time to him as I do to other things. And when I think about praying for 5 minutes a day, you know, whoopee,
mm-hmm.
5 minutes a day,
mm-hmm.
You know, God's going, whoa, that was quick,
yeah.
right? And the idea of actually Jesus wanting a relationship with me where we can actually talk back and forth, and I'm still struggling with that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a difficult struggle. I have to go out to Patchum and Terrace, this hermitage.
Mm-hmm.
I have to actually physically remove myself from the world to be able to even begin to get to where I think God
yeah,
would like
I want to touch
to.
On that when we come back from break. I'm speaking to Ward Brehm. He's in studio. His book is Bigger Than Me. Just when I thought I had all the answers, God changed the questions. Be back in a minute. Welcome back to the show. 10 minutes until the top of the hour. I have Ward Brehm in studio. He's written a book called Bigger Than Me. Just when I thought I had all the answers, God changed the questions. Ward's a successful businessman, and all of a sudden he goes to Africa and discovers that there's a different needs in the world, different ways to live. And you've come back and you've written about it, and it's absolutely a spectacular read. I just enjoyed it so much. Ward, you were talking about a little retreat you went on, and I just found it interesting how difficult it is for us to be alone with God, because we can't hear his voice unless we spend some time listening.
Yeah, and it's actually scary. At least it is for me, because you are totally exposed. When God asks, you know, Rick Warren's fond of saying, you know, when God asks a question, you know, it's typically not for his benefit. And, you know, you get alone with God for an extended period of time and really ask to hear his voice. For me, it takes quite a while to just get the, you know, the safari brain quieted down. You have so many different distracted thoughts, and yet it is the one thing that we can give back to God is
mm-hmm.
time.
Ward, what was one of the hardest chapters to write in your book?
I would say the chapter I should remember the name of it, but it was on ego.
Okay.
Losing self is the title
losing
of the
self, chapter 8. Wherever I go, there I am.
Right.
I love it.
You know, there's a period in my life, actually it's continuing, not quite as, it's abated a little bit, but I was really sick of myself.
You called yourself a jerk a number of times in this book.
Well, a lot of people would argue that still applies, but but I'd say up until God changed my life and he used Africa as the way to do that, I think I was a jerk.
Mm-hmm.
I was filled with myself, everything where the world revolved around me. I was probably a malignant narcissist.
Mm-hmm.
And no doubt really obnoxious. And again, a lot of those terms still probably fit, but I'm working on it. And what I discovered, particularly since Africa and devoting the better part of the last 25 years to what I consider to be my calling, which is to be an advocate for people who have no voice, the extreme poor in Africa, what I realized is that even doing good for God, you know, being God's ambassador, it oftentimes can be ego just in a trickier disguise.
I'm with you on that.
So
I get
the question that comes back is, are you really doing this? Is this just another form of self-promotion? Is writing this book just another form of self-promotion? Mm-hmm. I actually went to Rick Warren and asked him about it,
mm-hmm.
you know, the author of the greatest selling book besides the Bible of all time. And it was interesting. He said, well, you know, you have to pay attention to that because oftentimes you do get off track. It doesn't mean you keep doing the good even if it's for the wrong reason. But but reboot and really give some thought as to what your motives are, and God will bring you back. But I do think that it's a challenge.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot of self-awareness, Ward, that you would actually even ask that question because, you know, I sometimes hardly ever trust my own sincerity.
Right.
Because you can do something that you think is you're doing for somebody else, but then you can also drop that in when you're at a party and go, yeah, I do that on Friday nights,
right.
You know, as if you should pat me on the back now.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it is interesting, and it's a lot of self-awareness. Talk a little bit about how, as a successful business person, you realized, and I think you quoted Stephen Covey at one point, or had mentioned it, that old adage that you spend your whole life climbing that ladder only to find the ladder's against the wrong wall.
I think that God gives each of us abilities. I do believe that God has a purpose for each of our lives. And the skills that he gave me, which are communication, arguably manipulating people into doing what I would like them to do, I think for the first half of my life I used for financial gain. It allowed me to be successful with my businesses. Now those skills are being used for a whole another set of purposes. And instead of trying to sell people things, I'm actually using some of those persuasive skills to help turn I'm using them in Washington, D.C. On behalf of USAID and a lot of the aid efforts. So I think it's a subtle twist. People say, well, I don't know what my calling is. Well, a good place to look is what you're good at. And then are you applying what you're good at to things that are self-serving or things that are that you think God has made you uniquely for?
And with what you're doing now still requires a lot of effort and energy, and you're probably working harder than ever, I would guess.
Well, I retired from business about 5 years ago and went through that whole syndrome.
Okay.
Where I was so panicked at the idea of becoming totally irrelevant and playing golf every day with a bunch of boring old men.
Right.
That I really overdid it. And now I'm in the process really of cutting back. Younger legs can do a lot of these things.
Yeah.
And giving that up is very easy for me and to try to move more into more of an advisory. It's an elder.
Yeah.
I am an elder.
Yeah. Well, talk about just being religious but maybe not knowing Christ.
You know, I think for me, I was a Christian. I've been a Christian my whole life. I was confirmed in the church. It had absolutely no meaning for me.
Interesting.
It was a cultural thing, just like there are a lot of cultural Muslims, a lot of cultural Jews, and plenty of cultural Christians. So if someone would have asked me, well, based on your being a Christian, what is your relationship with Jesus about? I'd say, well, wait a second. I'm not one of these kooky ones. You know, I'm not, don't get me confused, you know, with these. So it really was cultural, and it didn't become real to me until I met Jesus in the, among the extreme poverty that I witnessed in Africa, changed my life and began the relationship with the person, Jesus.
Yeah. And I know your wife, Chris, has gone through some struggles and had some, pretty life-threatening things, and boy, you've had to go to God in prayer a lot in your life.
Yeah, and it was amazing because with Chris, she was given 2 weeks to live at Mayo. There was nothing they could do. It was an inoperable tumor, and sent us home with that news. And it was really her faith. It was one of the most powerful witnesses that our family and everyone who knew her could see, as she was at total peace. She was assured of where she was going. They asked if she wanted to have medication, and she said, Jesus is my antidepressant. And she was safe. I mean, it was a miracle. It was a whole chapter in the book dedicated to that. But a tangible reminder that we're going someplace.
Yeah. Ward, thank you so much for coming in. The book is Bigger Than Me. I highly recommend it. Go to Amazon.com. Bigger Than Me, Ward Brehm. We'll be back in a minute. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.